Okay, let's unpack this chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. It hits millions across the globe, but there's a really specific challenge within that group, right?
Absolutely. Severe emphysema, specifically when it comes with lung hyperinflation, it's a major hurdle.
And it's more than just struggling for breath, isn't it? It seems to, like, affect everything.
That's the key point. It really does ripple through the whole body. We're talking about extrapulmonary effects, things happening outside the lungs.
Extrapulmonary.
Yeah, think body composition, muscle strength, things that really impact quality of life, and even, how long someone might live.
So that sets up why we're doing this deep dive today. We had a listener ask about getting up to speed on some new research here, quickly but thoroughly.
Right. And our goal is to break down a specific study, pull out the key findings for you without you feeling like you're drowning in, well, data.
Exactly. Think of us as your guides through the research paper.
Making it digestible.
So the study we're zeroing in on is titled Metabolic Changes After Bronchoscopic Lung Volume Reduction with Endobronchial Valves in COPD Patients. It was published in Archivos de Bronconeumologia.
And the central question they tackled is pretty significant.
Which
So
is?
basically, if you have severe COPD with this hyperinflation and you get this treatment called bronchoscopic lung volume reduction using endobronchial valves, let's call it BLVR-EBV for short.
Okay, BLVR-EBV. Got it.
What does that procedure do to your body composition, your fat, your muscle function, and all those metabolic markers floating around in your blood?
And there's another layer too, right? The rehab question.
Exactly. Does adding pulmonary rehabilitation or PR change those effects? Does it matter if you do PR before or after the BLVR-EBV, or does the valve procedure kind of do the heavy lifting on its own for these specific outcomes?
So it's looking at the valves, plus or minus rehab,
Right.
and measuring stuff like muscle, fat, strength, blood markers.
You got it. And the source is this research article laying out their methods, their results, proper clinical science.
Okay, before we get into what they found, maybe a quick refresher. COPD, hyperinflation. What are we talking about?
Sure. So COPD is this umbrella term for progressive lung diseases, making breathing harder over time. Severe emphysema is a type where the lungs' air sacs get damaged, lose their stretchiness, and that leads to static lung hyperinflation. Air gets trapped, the lungs overfill and can't empty properly. It's like they're permanently overinflated.
That sounds incredibly uncomfortable. And BLVR-EBV, you said it's less invasive?
Yeah, compared to traditional lung volume reduction surgery. With BLVR-EBV, they go in bronchoscopically, with a scope down the airways and place these tiny one-way valves.
One-way valves. How do they work?
They put them in the airways, leading to the most damaged hyperinflated lobe. Air can get out of that lobe when you exhale, but it can't get back in when you inhale. So that part of the lung gradually deflates.
Ah, clever. It reduces the trapped air volume.
Precisely. It takes some pressure off the system.
Okay. But the study wasn't just about breathing. You mentioned these extrapulmonary manifestations. Sounds serious.
It is, because COPD isn't just confined to the lungs, it causes systemic issues. A big one is abnormal body composition.
Meaning.
Often, patients have low muscle mass, sarcopenia, we sometimes call it, and sometimes also excess fat tissue, particularly visceral fat.
Visceral fat, the stuff around the organs.
That's the one. And it's not just about appearance. Low muscle mass is linked to poor outcomes, reduced function, higher mortality, and that visceral fat. It's metabolically active, linked to inflammation, insulin resistance, cardiovascular risk.
So body composition is a really big deal for prognosis in COPD.
A very big deal, especially low weight and muscle wasting in these emphysema patients with hyperinflation. So understanding if an intervention like BLVR-EBV can positively impact that is, well, it's really important.
Okay, that makes total sense. So knowing the stakes, how did the researchers actually set up this study to investigate BLVR-EBV and the rehab?
Right, so this was actually a sub-study, part of a bigger trial called SOL-LVE. They started with 97 people, 74 made it through the whole 6 months.
And these participants, what were their characteristics?
They all had severe emphysema, really limited airflow FEV1, that's a measure of breathing out forcefully, was 45% or less of predicted. And they had significant hyperinflation residual volume, over 175% predicted. Basically, a lot of trapped air.
Okay, so definitely the target group.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And importantly, they were all considered eligible for both the BLVR-EBV procedure and pulmonary rehab.
And how were they divided up?
They were randomized into three groups. Group one got PR first, then BLVR-EBV. Group two got BLVR-EBV first, then PR. And group three got BLVR-EBV only, no formal PR program as part of the study.
Interesting. So you can compare the procedure alone versus the combinations.
Yeah.
And how long do they track them?
Measurements were taken at baseline before anything happened, and then again 6 months after the last intervention was completed.
Last intervention. Okay, so if they had PR after the valves, the 6 months started after the PR finished.
Exactly. That timing difference is something we'll come back to, maybe, as a limitation.
Got it. Hey, can we just quickly recap the interventions? The valves we covered, but what did the pulmonary rehab involve?
Sure. The PR was pretty standard, comprehensive stuff based on guidelines, usually 8 to 10 weeks. It involves supervised exercise training, nutritional advice, education about managing COPD, behavioral strategies, but the whole package.
A multifaceted approach.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the measurements. You mentioned body composition, strength. What exactly did they measure and how?
They used quite a few tools. DECA-S scans gave them the whole body picture. Fat mass index, lean mass index, very precise.
Yeah, okay.
Then they did CT scans, specifically of the thigh.
The thigh. Why just the thigh?
It's a large, important muscle group, crucial for mobility, and changes there often reflect what's happening systemically with skeletal muscle. The CT let them measure the cross-sectional area of muscle and fat within the thigh, and also muscle density using Hounsfield units.
Hounsfield units? What's that tell you? Like muscle quality?
Kind of, yeah. Lower density can suggest more fat infiltration within the muscle, which isn't ideal for function. So it gives an idea beyond just muscle size.
Interesting detail. What else? Strength? Activity?
Yep. Handheld dynamometers measured strength biceps, triceps, quadriceps, plus hand grip strength. And they used accelerometers, little wearable devices, for a week to track daily physical activity. Things like step count, walking time, sedentary time.
Accelerometers. Okay, like a fancy fitness tracker.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Capturing real-world activity. And finally, blood tests. Fever. Key metabolic players. Leptin, adiponectin, those hormones from fat tissue, plus insulin and triglycerides. They also looked at the ratio of leptin and adiponectin relative to the amount of fat mass the person had.
Wow, okay, that's a thorough assessment. Body comp, muscle size and quality, strength, daily activity, and blood markers.
So what did they find overall, looking at everyone together after 6 months?
When they pooled all 74 participants who finished, there were some definite positive shifts 6 months down the line.
Like?
Okay, significant increases in total body weight, lean mass index, and fat mass index.
Wait, increases in fat mass too? Yes. Both lean and fat mass went up on average. Also, improvements in muscle strength, specifically arm muscles and hand grip, and increases in daily physical activity, like walking time and step counts.
Okay, mostly positive then. Body mass up, strength up in some areas, more active. Any other changes?
They also saw an increase in triglyceride levels in the blood and a significant reduction in the ratio of leptin to fat mass.
Leptin to fat mass ratio went down. What didn't change significantly?
Interestingly, no significant change in quadriceps strength, the big thigh muscle. Also, no change in sitting time or the overall intensity of movement captured by accelerometry. And on the blood markers, no significant changes in adiponectin levels, the adiponectin to fat mass ratio, or insulin levels.
Okay, so a mixed bag on some specifics,
yeah.
But overall gains in mass, some strength, and activity. Now, the really critical question,
yeah.
Did BLVR EBV itself drive these changes? Regardless of the rehab.
This is really the punchline of the study. The answer appears to be...
Right.
Yeah. The core finding was that BLVR EBV alone resulted in significant improvements in body weight, lean mass, fat mass, including that visceral fat muscle strength, the arm and hand grip ones, physical activity, and those shifts in the adipokine profile, specifically the leptin ratio.
And this happened whether or not they got PR.
Exactly. The study found no significant differences between the group that only got BLVR EBV and the groups that got BLVR EBV plus PR, either before or after, across all these body composition, muscle activity, and metabolic outcomes they measured.
Wow. Okay. That's quite something. So the valves themselves seem to be making the difference here for these particular measures.
It strongly suggests that yes. The lung volume reduction itself seems to trigger these systemic benefits.
Why would that happen? Why would deflating part of the lung lead to gaining weight and lean mass?
Well, there are a few plausible mechanisms the researchers suggest. One is energy expenditure. Breathing is hard work with hyperinflation. It burns a lot of calories just sitting still, high resting energy expenditure. Reduce the hyperinflation. Reduce the work of breathing.
You burn fewer calories at rest.
Potentially, yes. Leading to a positive energy balance if intake stays the same or increases. Another factor is eating itself.
The shortness of breath during meals.
Right. Meal-related dyspnea. It's common, and it limits intake. If BLVR EBV reduces that breathlessness, patients might simply be able to eat more comfortably, increasing their calorie and nutrient intake.
That makes intuitive sense.
less breathless, eat more, gain weight.
And it fits with findings from lung volume reduction surgery too, which also often leads to weight gain and increases in fat-free mass.
Okay. What about the muscles? Strength went up in some areas, but you said quadriceps strength didn't change significantly, and neither did muscle density in the CT scans. What's going on there?
That's a really interesting nuance. Yes, arm and hand grip strength improved, but not the legs. And the muscle quality, judged by density, didn't seem to improve either.
So stronger arms, but maybe not better quality muscle overall.
It could be. The researchers offer a few ideas. Maybe the increase in general physical activity, like walking more, wasn't a strong enough or specific enough stimulus to really build quad strength or change muscle composition. You often need targeted resistance training for that.
Right. Just walking more might not be enough to build significant muscle.
Exactly. Or, despite feeling better, maybe patients still spent a lot of time sedentary, which hinders muscle gains. There's also the underlying issue in COPD chronic inflammation, a catabolic state that might just make it harder to improve muscle quality, even if activity increases slightly.
So the BLVR helps. Activity goes up a bit, but maybe not enough to overcome these other factors affecting muscle.
That's one interpretation, and they mention another study using CT scans of the lower back muscles after BLVR EBV found similar results strength gains without density changes. So it might be a pattern.
Fascinating. Okay, let's swing back to the metabolic markers in the blood. The leptin fat mass ratio decreased. Adiponectin and insulin didn't change. Triglycerides went up. What do we make of all that?
It's complex. The lower leptin to fat mass ratio is potentially good news. Leptin is linked to inflammation, so less leptin per unit of fat might suggest reduced inflammation, but,
yeah, but
they caution we need more research to confirm that link specifically in this context.
Okay, and adiponectin staying the same.
Right.
Even though fat mass increased,
yeah,
adiponectin is generally seen as protective, right?
It is, yeah. Ugh. Anti-inflammatory, insulin sensitizing. The fact it didn't change might reflect different roles for these adipokines, leptin and adiponectin, in different types of COPD. Maybe it's less involved in this emphysema dominant group, or its regulation is just more complicated than simply tracking fat mass.
Mm. And no change in insulin, despite weight gain.
Yeah, that suggests the insulin resistance often seen in COPD might be driven more by other factors like low oxygen levels, hypoxemia, or ongoing systemic inflammation, which maybe weren't fully resolved just by the BLVR-EBV procedure itself.
Right, and the triglycerides going up.
That could simply be a reflection of eating more increased dietary fat and calorie intake now that breathing is easier during meals, or potentially a shift in energy metabolism, how the body's handling fuels.
So overall, the BLVR-EBV seems to nudge the metabolic profile, but it's not a complete normalization, perhaps.
That seems a fair summary based on these findings. It influences things, but the picture is complex.
Which brings us back to pulmonary rehab. The big surprise, maybe, was that it didn't seem to add extra benefit on top of BLVR-EBV for these specific outcomes.
It really is a standout finding. For these measures, body composition, muscle function, activity, metabolic markers, PR before or after BLVR-EBV didn't lead to significantly different results compared to BLVR-EBV alone at the six-month mark.
Why might that be? We generally think of PR as being hugely beneficial.
It absolutely is for many things like exercise capacity, symptoms, quality of life, but its effect specifically on body composition has been a bit more variable in research. Some studies show benefits, others don't find significant changes in lean mass. And the researchers here also float the idea that maybe because BLVR-EBV is less invasive than major surgery, the role of PR as a prehabilitation, getting someone fit for the intervention, might be less critical than it is before lung volume reduction surgery. The procedure itself might provide a strong enough stimulus for these initial systemic changes.
So maybe the bar is lower to get the benefits from BLVR-EBV compared to surgery, making the added value of PR for these specific outcomes less apparent.
That's a plausible interpretation, yeah. It definitely doesn't mean PR isn't valuable for these patients overall, but perhaps its main benefits lie in other areas, or maybe longer-term effects not captured fully here.
Good point. And speaking of limitations, were there any caveats the researchers mentioned?
Yes, they were upfront about a few things. One was that difference in follow-up time. The groups getting PR had their final measurements taken later because the 6 months started after they finished PR. That slightly longer time frame could have influenced results, maybe masking some PR benefits if they tend to fade over time.
Okay, that's important context. Anything else?
The baseline blood samples for the PR first group were taken at a slightly different point relative to the intervention, which makes direct baseline comparisons tricky for those markers. And ideally, they would have loved a fourth group. PR only, no BLVR EBV.
Pure rehab control group.
Exactly. That would have really helped isolate the effects of PR versus BLVR EBV versus the combination, but that wasn't part of the sub-study design.
Understandable. So keeping those limitations in mind, let's try to synthesize the main message for our listener. What's the big takeaway?
I think the core takeaway is that BLVR EBV, this minimally invasive valve procedure, delivers significant benefits that go way beyond just the lungs in these patients with severe emphysema and hyperinflation.
The systemic effect.
Yes. It leads to gains in body weight, importantly, both lean and fat mass, improvements in arm and hand strength, gets people moving more, and influences that adipocaine profile. And critically, in this study, these benefits seem to happen largely independent of adding pulmonary rehab.
So for someone trying to quickly grasp this research, the headline is, these valves pack a punch systemically, maybe more than we realized, and potentially on their own for some of these physical and metabolic aspects.
I think that captures it well. It highlights the profound impact that just reducing the mechanical burden of hyperinflation can have on the entire body.
And the real aha moment, I think, is that lack of additional benefit from PR in this specific context for these measures. It really makes you pause and think about the standalone power of the BLVR EBV intervention itself.
It does. It challenges us to consider how these interventions work, both alone and together, and maybe how we sequence them best for individual patients.
Definitely food for thought. Okay, as we wrap up this deep dive, let's leave our listener with something to chew on, a final provocative thought stemming from this.
Well, given that BLVR EBV led to increases in both lean mass and fat mass, what does that mean long term?
Is the fat gain concerning?
It raises the question, what are the potential long term cardiovascular and metabolic consequences of that shift? We know visceral fat isn't ideal. So while gaining weight and lean mass is likely good, we need to think about the overall picture. And it makes you wonder, how could other lifestyle interventions, maybe more targeted nutritional support or different types of exercise beyond standard PR, be combined with BLVR EBV to really optimize outcomes? How do we maximize the lean mass gain while managing the fat mass gain?
So it opens up new questions about optimizing long-term health after this procedure.
Exactly. It's not just about the lungs. It's about managing the whole patient, body composition, and metabolic health included for the long haul.